remove their head. Thankfully, he had removed that rule after its use, not wanting it used against him. For the damage reflection rule, the connection was more simple, being related to proximity. In that case, how did her strike hit me? Is it simply because her effect allowed her to bypass my rule? 10,000 threads, first form. Army of one. The small individual's voice called out, and Calthrall felt her presence shatter into 100 identical copies. Each copy was wielding 2 blades and charging at him. These blades gave Calthrall a sense of crisis. Combined with the previous attack, he wasn't sure if he would be able to mitigate this attack with his original rule. New rule. Starting from a radius of 50 meters, the closer any living being comes to my body, the slower they will move. Similar to his first rule, this was one that could often protect his life. Even with this, he braced himself. The various clones did not seem to immediately slow down, leaving Calthrall to believe that they were accelerating their own time to counteract his rule. His body contorted in bizarre directions, bending where there shouldn't be joints, and dodged the vast majority of one of the blades that sliced at him. One white blade managed to scratch his chest as he flipped backwards, hesitating. A sense of intense joy welled up inside him. Even with this many clones of herself, she is forcing her attention to be split. It seems like she bypassed my rule again, but she wasn't strong enough to inflict any lasting damage. Calthrall watched the various enemies. The 100 clones all discarded their white blades, seeming to give up on the increased difficulty of dual wielding to focus purely on a single sword, a smart move in his opinion. But he knew that it wouldn't be enough. As he thought that, one of the massive dragons swept down towards him. A low chuckle echoed around Calthrall as he charged towards the dragon, pleased to find that it slowed down unwillingly the closer that it got. So they can't all ignore my rules, only the 3 girls. He thought to himself in joy, allowing the dragon to slowly attempt to bite at him. The moment that it did, its own head was crushed. Calthrall turned to face the girls again, his claws stretching outwards. You brought so many reinforcements. However, it seems that they are all useless. Didn't anybody teach you that numbers aren't the only thing that matter in a fight? New rule. Living creatures within the battlefield will sustain damage equivalent to 1,000 units of ki for every living creature within 50 meters that it recognizes as an ally. It was dangerous to use a 4th-tier rule already, as that meant that he only had 1 free slot left to apply another rule before he had to take one down. However, the effect was immediate. The vast majority of the army shattered, unable to bear the weight of their alliance. Sienna and Clara's eyes went wide, while the many Danas narrowed their eyes in concentration. 10,000 threads, second form, flickering moment. The 100 copies all vanished, Calthrall rushing backwards in alarm. At the spot where he had previously stood, all 100 clones appeared, swinging their swords in from unpredictable angles. And then they vanished again, forcing Calthrall to maintain his defensive. I see. Because they are all one person, the rule isn't inflicting the appropriate damage. Or are they not considered living beings? That would explain a few things. Calthrall thought that the answer was most likely. The feeling of joy from before returning to him. I have to do it. New rule. When any being launches an attack, the core of their existence will become exposed. If this core is struck, they will experience a complete death. This 5th rule was one that he typically reserved for only the most crucial situations. However, given how much pressure this single individual was giving him, he knew that it counted. As he was preparing to dodge again, he saw Clara's whips strike out, aiming to utilize your effect with no cause again. If he had lips, they would be tugged into a smug grin. The moment her arms moved, a shining core became visible in her abdomen. He could already feel the pain spreading across her chest, her attack hitting him before it completed. But he didn't mind. With a thought, he appeared in front of Clara, his claws swiping at the glowing core. Her eyes went wide, her body going limp. The whips in her hands fell as she collapsed, dissipating into an inky black substance. "Clara!" Sienna shouted with wide eyes. She stretched her hand forward, dark energy erupting. "Kama! Black wind!" Blades of darkness formed, striking out towards Calthral. However, this time he didn't bother to dodge. The earlier wound that he had taken was already in the process of healing, and his first rule kicked in, causing two of the surviving army nearby to be sliced in halves. Unfortunately, another glowing orb was revealed in Sienna's body, which Calthral took full advantage of attacking. Just as he sensed the army of Dana teleporting to his position, he teleported to Sienna, swiping at the orb. Just like Clara, Sienna's body collapsed, starting to dissolve into a black substance. When he turned around to face Dana, he found that her face was unnaturally calm. "Is she the type that appears calmer the angrier she becomes?" he wondered to himself, his body shivering with the joy of battle. He knew that his victory was at hand. All he had to do now was kill the true Dana, and all of the other monsters would disappear. However, he didn't seem to need to be worried about that. Dana shook her head. "Everyone, retreat," she ordered, the monsters falling back into the darkness and disappearing on their own. "Oh? Are you going to run away now that I've killed your copies?" Calthral teased, hoping to keep her in the fight longer. He could tell that Dana was an important asset for the local forces. She came alone, knowing his strength, and challenged him to a frontal confrontation. "My familiars," Dana corrected. "And no, I just don't want any distractions." "Thousand arms. First form. One strike," the clones all shouted, slashing out with the black blades in their hands, each one creating an arc of energy that traveled through the air. Facing 100 identical attacks, Calthral wasn't worried. He had dodged such strikes in close quarters before, so why should he worry now? As his body twisted between the attacks, his senses focused on the various clones of Dana. Each of them had a glowing core within their body, indicating that each of them could be considered real at the moment. Did she perfectly divide her existence into each of the 100 copies? A commendable ability, I must admit. Calthral flashed forward, appearing next to one of the clones and slashing at the golden core on her body. She let out a gasp and shattered. Calthral himself immediately moving on to the next. He found that their bodies briefly stiffened with the first death, meaning that there must have been some sort of feedback between the clones. This short moment was all that he needed, killing more than 20 clones before they managed to forcibly recover. Dana grit her teeth, causing the clones to disappear and merge into one again. "Absurdity of fate," she muttered, reaching a hand out towards him. Calthral felt as if the void itself was closing around him. "Undo the first rule. New rule. Prohibit void solidification within 5 centimeters of my body," he declared, the hand seeming to melt as it grabbed him. His figure flashed, launching forward and appearing in front of Dana. "This is my win," he said, slashing once again at the golden core within her body. Dana's eyes trembled, falling to her knees as her skin turned black. Calthral chuckled to himself, wiping his hands off as the joy of battle filled him once again. "It's a pity," he said, turning and walking away. "Had you come properly prepared, you might have truly defeated me." "You're feeling happy a bit too early, aren't you?" Dana's voice spoke up from behind him, and a black blade pierced through his back. "But that's why I cut you with the joy sword first." Intense ripples spread throughout Calthral's mind, together with the pain, joy, and sorrow, alternating in equal measure. "How? I extinguished your very being. I granted you true death." The blackness in Dana's skin slowly started to recede as she stood, one arm extended to hold the sword stabbing into Calthral. "The world's shadow. So it had this kind of hidden trick," she chuckled to herself, having felt one of her shadow army extinguish the moment Clara, Sienna, and herself died. In order to let them recover, each of the others had retreated into the shadow world when they died, And this is also why Dana ordered everyone's retreat, not wishing to let her spare lives be extinguished. Seeing that Cal Thrall had survived the twins, swords, retribution, Dana knew that she had to weaken his mind. 1,000 arms, 10,000 threads, true form, void walk, she said, her body seeming to shimmer as she stepped into and through Cal Thrall's body. The moment she did, his mental resistance crumbled, the twin swords, retribution, directly shattering his essence. Chapter 39. Mora looked down at the spot where her clone had only just disappeared. She had only had a few minutes to mourn, a show of respect to a warrior worth remembering. Afterwards, she felt something was wrong in the world. The wind began blowing in the opposite direction, and she tried to lift her head to the sky. However, she found her head sinking further down instead. One crisis ends, and another immediately begins? She asked herself in alarm, trying to get an understanding of what she was able to do. Trying to take a step forward made her fall backwards. Trying to mobilize her ki instead caused her mana to leave her body. Mora spent nearly 15 minutes adjusting to what she could only compare to the most sadistic version of inverted controls anyone had ever heard of. The worst part was when she did manage to get her body to move how she wanted it to and opened her mouth to speak. "This is normal," she said, though that was certainly not what she meant to say. "Even what I say is reversed?" She tried to grumble, but only let out a brief chuckle instead. "This is wonderful." I crossed my arms behind my back, closing my eyes and counting the seconds after Dana left. I had told myself that if it took her longer than 10 minutes to fight this enemy, I would have to send someone else's backup, regardless of Dana's wishes. This wasn't an invasion that we could afford to draw out. Every minute that it lasted, countless lives were lost. After roughly 6 minutes, a void gate opened, and everyone immediately took a defensive stance, preparing for a monster to emerge. Instead, Dana stumbled through, her health bar appearing over her head, and almost entirely bottomed out. Tsubaki's eyes widened, rushing over to support Dana, while I looked at Leowyn. "She's clean," Leowyn responded, causing me to sigh faintly in relief before walking over myself. "Are you all right, Dana?" I asked, in a soft tone, to which Dana chuckled, her face pale. It was clear that she was drastically lacking in energy at the moment, barely holding her body together. "You should see the other guy. Don't worry, the Void God won't be a problem anymore. I think he was the only one like that, too. At least, nobody else like him came to get involved or stop me from leaving." I gave a small nod at her explanation, my eyes flicking up to her health bar again. "But are you all right?" I asked again, causing Dana to hesitate. "To be honest, I've been better. Hey, did you know that the world's shadow has a life-protecting ability? If you die, it sacrifices one of your shadows and gives you their energy. This was a fun way to discover that, though wish it would have picked a better sacrifice. I don't think that I'll be able to join the fight for the rest of this invasion." I nodded my head, having learned about that aspect of the energy thanks to Thelsa's advancement to the perfect self. "Clara and Sienna? They're users of the world shadow like me. When they died, I put them in my shadow world to let them recover. They don't have any combat power right now, either," Dana explained while shaking her head. "Sorry, boss. You'll have to handle the rest of this without us." "Don't be sorry," I said with a smile. "You may have just given us the chance to win this. Tsubaki, can you take Dana to her room?" Tsubaki hesitated for a moment before nodding her head and picking up Dana, who promptly complained. "Hey, I can still walk, you know." Tsubaki simply smiled down at Dana. "Just rest. Leave the rest of this to us." Once they were gone, I turned to look at Leowyn. "Now that he's dealt with, we need to immediately arrange for another team to go out. Leowen had a grave look on her face, clearly agreeing with me.
"Don't worry, I'll lead the team myself this time," she said, turning to leave before I had the chance to argue.
With her gone, I simply let out a long sigh, looking at Lyfra. "If the last gasp is still ready to mobilize, you can have it meet the team in the void. There shouldn't be any other super powerhouses in the enemy team, aside from some more troublesome void monsters."
"Leave it to me, Chief," Lyfra said,
giving a quick salute and running off. I was just about to let out a long sigh when Aurevie, or rather Aurevie's incarnation, appeared.
"Aurevie! I really hope that you're not here with more bad news. We finally got a win."
Aurevie hesitated before shaking her head.
"No, not like that. I wanted to let you know that I think the problem in Lorik has changed. Previously, I had been getting prayers requesting to evacuate, but I had to ignore them because of the quarantine."
I paused, turning to fully face Aurevie. "The prayers haven't stopped, have they?" In a situation like this, receiving no prayers for salvation would essentially mean the death of the world. Thankfully, that didn't seem to be the case.
"No, they've not stopped," Aurevie said, her face turning complicated. "Rather, they're now praying to be left alone."
"Left alone?" My eyes went wide, unsure why anyone would pray to be left alone by a goddess that could get them out of a hopeless situation.
"That's right," Aurevie confirmed again. "Again, I haven't been answering the prayers to prevent any connections that could be traced. However, right around the time that Dana went out to fight, every prayer I was receiving from Lorik was suddenly reversed."
I hesitated, giving a small nod. Either their apocalypse has evolved, or it was replaced for some reason. Is it possible that the inhabitants of Lorik managed to defeat the Void Beast attacking their world on their own?
"It's certainly possible,"
Aurevie spoke in a serious tone.
"Lorik has had 20 times as long as any other world to work on it. If anyone was going to be able to come up with a solution, it would be them or Spica. Unfortunately, there haven't been any changes in the prayers from Spica's side."
"Got it. Thanks," I smiled to Aurevie, before focusing on sending a message to Leowen. "Lorik's immediate crisis has been dealt with. You can lower its priority for the time being, and focus on Spica and Earth primarily, and then the others as stated before. Hopefully that message would ease the pressure on the others slightly, though this was still an urgent situation. At this point, there would have been another round or two of murder games on Earth, so the population would be starting to fall faster and faster." When Leowen received the message, it did indeed bring her a small feeling of relief, though she was far more concerned with the worlds that she did still need to support. She arrived in front of her temple, where an army of fallen gods had gathered. Some of those from the first team still appeared shaken by the death of one of the oldest fallen gods in the world, and someone that Leowen had personally trained.
"Everyone," Leowen spoke up, attention snapping to her.
The fallen gods tried their best to straighten their backs, showing the utmost respect for the daughter of the Keeper.
"Time is short, so I'll keep this brief. The enemy that defeated my disciple has been slain. Now is the time for us to strike, before they are able to strengthen their forces, and before they are able to kill even more of our people."
No sooner did Leowen say this before she tore open a portal into the void.
"This time, I will personally lead the charge."
After saying so, she immediately stepped through the portal, the other fallen gods rushing to follow behind her. This was a mission led by the Greater Pantheon themselves, although they had their reservations due to the crushing defeat that they had previously suffered. There was no time to think about that. When they stepped through the gate, Leowen's pupils shrank into pinpricks, seeing what she considered to be the worst-case scenario. Dana's earlier report that there was only one Void Beast per world was now wrong. Without their general guiding them, they were on a blind rampage. There were more than 6 Void Beasts
attacking Deccan alone, and its defensive barrier was showing signs of cracking.
"Change of plans," she announced, projecting the message to the Keeper as well as every fallen god in her church. "All forces, prepare for the final battle. I repeat, this is an urgent message. All troops to war."
Subaki and I looked at one another in alarm when we received Leowen's message. The two of us had been saving ourselves for the final battle, expecting it to be after the first wave of void beasts had been destroyed and the others angered into action. We had hoped to whittle away at their numbers first, making the battle more favorable to us.
"Let's go," I said in a firm tone, Subaki nodding her head.
If Leowen was calling for the final battle to begin immediately, the situation had to have changed for the worse. Subaki tore open a barrier to the void, and the two of us stepped through. The moment that we did, I realized why the situation had gotten to the point that it had. Aside from the beasts that were pacified by the pasture within the void, every monster was now targeting a world. Worse yet, even beasts that did not come from the invasion were drawn by the chaos, participating in the assaults on the barriers. It was regrettable that Dana wasn't here, so I couldn't summon the Shadow Hound. However, my eyes flashed as the other 10 beasts of the end appeared.
"All of you, enter battle," I called out, pointing at Deccan's world barrier.
Originally, I had considered Deccan to only be medium priority, because the damage to that world had largely already been done. However, if the void barrier breaks, the power of that apocalypse would increase several fold. It would not be a surprise if the entire universe was instantly destroyed. The 10 beasts of the end charged forward, the Bodhisattva clapping its hands together.
"Void shattering," it announced, ripples radiating through the void and pushing back the void beasts attacking Deccan, forcing them to sustain minor injuries in the process.
"Subaki, you and I will take care of Earth. Let Leowen's troops deal with Spica," I said, though a rift opened next to us a moment later. Just as I was preparing to strike, I heard a serene laugh spreading through the void.
"Ha-ha! The battle started without us! That's not very hospitable of you lot. All hands to cannons! Hoist the colors and wake the dragon!"
A massive ship made of golden wood emerged from the rift, a humanoid woman standing atop it and holding a black rapier.
"No soul shall retreat from this fight, men. This is the day that we were made for. Open the sail and chart a course to battle."
Looks like the last gasp had their transition prepared since earlier, and were just waiting for Lifra's signal to execute it, I thought in relief, glad to have another group fighting alongside us.
In the current situation, we had no information on the vast majority of the enemies, so we had to hope for the best and try our hardest to avoid the worst.
Chapter 40. Asnod clenched his fists as he looked at the city of Ashtanu, forcing himself not to speak. Every whimper or gasp in the city had turned into casualties, and nearly half the city had been destroyed at this point, even with Udana's warning. He could only imagine how it was on the rest of the planet, not daring to spread his senses out. He looked over at Udana, preparing to comfort her, only for her face to suddenly turn pale.
"What's the matter? Did it break through one of the barriers?"
Udana shook her head, slowly, looking up. Asnod followed her gaze but did not immediately see anything. It was still the middle of the day, so the sun was high in the sky. It wasn't until Udana's voice entered his mind that he understood the problem.
"There is now an additional apocalypse of darkness. We are losing the light from the furthest stars first. In under an hour, it will remove all light. Also, machinery is changing into humanoid appearances. Thankfully, they are destroying themselves by talking when they are created. I feel the presence of other void beasts outside the barrier, but I can't tell what they're doing."
Asnod's eyes went wide in alarm, barely suppressing the gasp that tried to rise from his throat.
"They are no longer operating the same as before?" he asked,
to which Udana shook her head. I don't know what changed, but they are attacking far more rampantly now. Immediately, the battle within the void had become intense. Tsubaki and I focused on the four monsters attacking Earth. My summons were engaging the beasts around Deccan. The last gasp was busy defending both Lorik and Spica, while Leowen's army tried to clear up the other worlds with their numbers. It was no longer a question of would we win, but how long it would take, and how many casualties we would face in the process. On the side of Tsubaki and myself, the four void beasts were ferocious, launching their attacks while keeping only a strand of their power on the world. There was a clown-like figure that cackled as he launched powerful blasts in the void. Going by his strength, I assumed that this was the one that had already been feeding on Earth for a while now. Aside from that, the other three were vaguely humanoid figures, though they seemed far more feral than the one that Dana had defeated. I had neither the time nor inclination to discover what rules they operated on. I split a portion of my focus on observing Tsubaki and each of the void beasts, as Leowen had taught me. While dodging to the side of a dark burst of energy, I materialized the guns that I had practiced creating and took aim at the clown. With a flick of my thumb, both of the pistols were set to their fire element. As soon as I pulled the trigger, the clown seemed to sense something wrong. It ducked out of the path of my bullets, letting two red lines whiz past its body. It cackled again, as if to taunt me, charging up another blast in its hands. One thing that I had learned by training with Leowen in the void was that dodging ranged attacks was incredibly easy, so long as you had proper control over your own time. In fact, I was rarely ever able to land a hit on Leowen in our battles because of this. After an attack left the control of its user, it would no longer be able to accelerate to catch its target. Thus, I accelerated myself just long enough to move out of the way of his attack while continuing to fire my pistols. However, just as I did, the clown kept moving aside to avoid them, even when I increased the speed of my bullets. Every time it did, it cackled, as if enjoying the show. Judging by its sharp claws, it should have been able to engage in melee combat, but preferred to taunt its opponent. After firing nearly 100 shots, I lowered my pistols, causing the clown to look at me in what must have been confusion. It shot another, smaller blast, as if trying to taunt me into continuing the fight, but a red line pierced the blast as it was flying toward me, causing the void beast to look alarmed. Bullet hell. This was a technique that I had come up with while practicing with Leowen. It was only possible to use due to the martial intent that I possessed, focusing on homing bullets. The weakness of ranged attacks in the void was that they could no longer accelerate or change direction after leaving the user's control. However, my bullets never left my control from the start. After each shot, I slowed the bullets to a stop in the distance, setting up an array that I was prepared to activate at a moment's notice. Now I had created a hell of 100 fire bullets, and it was ready to activate. The clown seemed to sense the danger, no longer interested in taunting me, and charged forward with elongated claws. However, my expression was cold, more than a dozen red lines curving through the void. He dodged repeatedly, but more and more bullets came, with the ones that missed their targets turning around. By the time that he had crossed half of the distance, the first bullet pierced his leg, causing him to stagger. In that moment, more than 50 red lines pierced through his body at the same time. Seeing him begin to dissolve, I turned to look at Tsubaki's battlefield, where she was busy fighting against the three weaker beasts. Unlike myself, Tsubaki did not specialize in ranged attacks. While she was able to use them, her specialty was in melee, where she had a significant advantage in the void. To me, it was no surprise that she had already dealt with two of the monsters and was quickly working on the third. "Awaken the dragon!" the pirate queen called out, one hand slapping against the railing of the ship. There was a rumble,
the figurehead at the front squirming as it rose from the ship. It was an elongated dragon, its body the same gold as the rest of the ship. The dragon released a howl that resonated through the void, causing the beasts around Lorik and Spica to stiffen.
"Lena, it's your turn. The ship is yours," she announced,
a small halfling walking forward with a determined expression.
"Yes, Captain," she shouted firmly, clasping her hands together. "May our path to victory never waver."
As she muttered these words, her body seemed to melt, spiritual energy surging from her to surround the ship. When it solidified, it took the form of an illusory compass, pointing towards the monsters in the distance.
"Saraya, my gun!" the captain shouted with a mad grin,
a Hirok woman charging over, her body distorted, turning into a black pistol in the captain's hands.
"All crew, show them our flame!"
The captain aimed her pistol forward, pulling the trigger. However, no bullet appeared with the sound of the gunshot. Instead, a hole suddenly opened in the forehead of a large feline beast. Likewise, half the crew had assumed their combat forms, held in the hands of the other half. Whether it was sword or gun, attacks were launched almost comically into the air, as if they were just waving their arms. With every attack, a wound appeared on whichever beast the giant compass pointed towards. This was the ability that Lena had created to assist the crew, one that had made her highly valued by the Pirate Queen. Using her compass form, she would interfere with space, causing two effects to occur. The first, any attacks launched from within the compass would be directed at the enemy she pointed towards. The second, one of the beasts opened its mouth wide, a green stream of light shooting out. Along the way, it condensed into innumerable vines, reaching out in an attempt to ensnare the last gasp. However, the vine seemed to twist around the compass, unable to touch it. This was the second effect, to isolate the space around the ship. Through these two effects, Lena could both protect the ship and aid in its offense. Unless the opponent also had the ability to interfere with space, she was confident that they would not be broken through. Leowen's expression was heavy as she led the charge towards the remaining worlds. Her army had the largest task of all, needing to deal with roughly half of the enemy forces by themselves. Yet this was to be expected, as their army was far larger than the others. They might not be specialists, like Tsubaki, the Last Gasp, or the Keeper's Summons. However, even as rank-and-file soldiers, their numbers were in the hundreds.
"This isn't the time to discuss priority anymore," Leowen shouted, waving her hand towards the distant worlds. "Everyone, divide and conquer. Use your powers to the best of your abilities. You outnumber the opponents 20-1, so use this to your advantage."
Her heart sank whenever she thought about all the people that had refused evacuation, knowing that most of them had probably died at this point. She had to force those thoughts out of her mind, though, knowing that they shouldn't be so stubborn the next time such an order was given. As the army charged, Leowen's eyes caught sight of a red figure trailing behind, furrowing her brow.
"Scarlet, you're not a Fallen. Why are you here?"
Scarlet turned to look at Leowen, a small smile on her lips.
"Sister, isn't it obvious?"
she asked, her red dress flowing beneath her. Leowen felt as if it had begun to mix with the fabric of the void.
"These beasts are endangering Dad's worlds. They've killed so many of his people. They even killed your disciple.
Scarlet's body seemed to shift, turning blood red as she grew.
"I'm rather angry right now. You won't begrudge me wanting to join this battle myself, will you?"
she asked, her voice turning into a deep rumble as her body turned more ferocious, a demonic figure with a gaping maw and razor-sharp claws. Leowen bit back her retort, shaking her head.
"Go,"
she said simply, and Scarlet vanished from view. Her snarling voice appeared behind one of the void beasts, latching onto its neck and dragging it away from Kion.
These beasts possess neither key nor blood, but all things can be dyed red, she asserted, her grip tightening as the monster flailed in her grasp, its body slowly changing color. Leowen had to specifically send a message to the rest of the army, warning them not to attack Scarlet by mistake. In her current form, it would be easy to mistake her for a monster. Furthermore, Leowen suddenly felt as if the burden that their forces had to face had lessened, with such a monster on their side. With that thought in mind, Leowen called upon her own divine artifact, a pitch-black sword, and flung herself into the melee. Chapter 41 Dana was left to rest alone in Olympus, Tsubaki having to run out as soon as she delivered Dana to her room. As she laid there, she took a mental count of her casualties. The Shadow Dragon's gone, as are most of the army. Thankfully, I had the others leave, or that faceless guy would have been more defensive. If he saw one of them dying when I should have, it would have been over. Dana allowed her mind to sink into her shadow world, checking up on Clara and Sienna. The two were resting in their own rooms, both barely able to move. For once, Dana was thankful that her familiars were both clone types, as it meant that they would be protected by the same energy that protected her. Still, the fact that I only got that little energy when I was revived? Dana knew that she couldn't rely on the world shadow to keep reviving her in combat. As long as the opponent kept their guard up, they would be able to continue killing Dana until she had no more shadows left to sacrifice. Especially someone like that. If he knew about that, he could have made a rule to kill everything linked to my soul at once. That was the very kind of thing that Dana was afraid would happen if she took one of the Keeper's summons with her. Had she not struck him with the Sword of Joy first, the thought might have occurred to him. In other words, I got lucky. Dana grit her teeth as she thought about that. There were simply too many variables in the previous fight, and it was the hardest one she had ever fought. Worse than any of her days in the underworld, or any fight she had had since. If things had played out only slightly differently, she would have perished completely. Getting a bit ahead of yourself with that self-critique, aren't you? A familiar voice spoke up. When Dana opened her eyes, she saw the red-skinned Ashley sitting at her desk nearby, watching her with her arms crossed. Huh? Oh, sorry. "Can you let me know when your main self is able to return?" Dana asked, having not sensed Ashley enter. "I want to make sure I'm kept up to date." Ashley simply smiled. "This is my main self," she said, causing Dana's eyes to widen. "Then it's—" she asked, to which the demoness nodded. "It's over. However, Pyrrhic the victory, the enemy was defeated. We were watching the whole thing from above. That fight was incredibly reckless of you, and I was worried you'd be joining us for good. But you won, and your victory gave everyone else the chance to fight." When Dana heard Ashley's words, she hesitated for a moment before nodding her head. "Yeah, that guy was a pain. So, the others?" Once the last of the apocalyptic beasts fell, I looked over to Tsubaki. "Go make sure Spica and Kion are safe. I want to assess the damages of the other worlds," I told her, receiving a firm nod before she flew off. My first destination was none other than Deccan, the place that was undoubtedly hit the hardest out of any world. I didn't even take the time to look at the rewards for the invasion, delaying the message to look at later. When I arrived, I saw Udana descending, looking teary-eyed at the ruined city of Ashtanu. My eyes widened at the scale of the destruction, clouds of smoke rising throughout the destroyed city. My earlier estimates of the damages fell far short, as less than a fifth of the city's inhabitants had managed to survive to the end. Spreading my world sight out to scan the planet, I felt my mind trembling. Other cities had it even worse, with a roughly 10% survival rate. As for outside of the cities, there was no more greenery on Deccan. Every last animal, plant, and animal had been killed, whether it was in a forest, the desert, or even the ocean. Outside of the cities there was nothing but endless craters and barren wastes. I couldn't help but look over at Adana.
"Are you going to be able to recover from this?" I asked,
and she seemed hesitant to answer.
"I can't bring back all of the lives that were lost, no," she answered in a sad tone. "The best that I can do is work together with Trival to allow the world to regain its greenery. As for the planets, if I try to focus on all of them like that, there will be no end to the power consumption. Rebuilding. We'll need help from the other worlds. Anything more advanced than a toaster was destroyed in the last wave."
This was the bitter truth that Deccan was now faced with. Aside from those that had evacuated ahead of time, there was only a small percentage of the population left. I wish that I could say that we wouldn't be able to survive another attack like this, but the truth is, that would be a lie. Although it is horrible to think about, our strength as a world was largely not impacted by this invasion. Instead, what was impacted was our foundation, which we would need to take time to recover. It would be difficult for us to recover, but not impossible. I offered a small nod, glancing over to look at the city. "If there's anything that I can do to help, just let me know."
Udana thought about it for a moment.
"Sadly, not even the digital conversion system can help here. We'd need to have an unlimited energy reserve of all three remaining energies to be able to repopulate a planet, and even if you bought the modifiers to let Ashley's team develop those, it would take years to implement. By that time, monsters would have already respawned naturally."
"Right.
It only takes a year for an uninhabited zone to be designated as claimed for monsters to begin spawning. How long will the respawning take, given that this is already our world?" Udana furrowed her brow in thought.
"I would say a week before the spawns are sustainable. I need to act fast with Trival, or else the monsters that spawn here might be influenced by the wasteland and be a disaster of their own.
Asnod, I'll be needing you to help me with this as well."
"Of course," Asnod smiled at her, the two leaving to get to work. Almost at the same time, Subaki returned to report.
"I've done a rough check of the various worlds, my keeper," she reported, with a deep bow. "From what I can tell, Lorik has suffered no serious damage to the planet. There are numerous violent monsters that remain on Spica, but they are within the capabilities for the locals to handle them. Fortunately, those affected in Kion have returned to normal after the defeat of the Void Monsters. If there is any world that suffered disastrous consequences aside from Deccan, it would be Sherdeen. The cosmic storm that swept through Sherdeen has caused severe harm to its atmosphere and scorched a large majority of the planet."
I nodded my head, closing my eyes to think. Was there any damage done to the world that James is using for his mana refinery? Subaki hesitated, her head dipping down.
"There was no hyperlane network established within that realm. The apocalypse that swept through it seemed to have destroyed any and all man-made structures."
"They'll need to rebuild that," I muttered bitterly to myself.
"We lost our energy source, and both Sherdeen and Deccan are almost uninhabitable. Is there any other majorly bad news that I need to hear right now?"
Subaki once again hesitated. "I found the world that the ninjas had inhabited in the Void. They had been using some tricks to keep it concealed, but the Void God apparently broke through them. That realm? I dare not guess what apocalypse struck it. However, the world's shell is filled with cracks, and it is dissolving at a visible speed. I estimate that there will be no survivors, other than those who evacuated to Fior."
I brought a hand up, pinching at the bridge of my nose. Losing the ninjas wasn't entirely critical. They had been a big help, here and there, but they had just as often gotten in the way when it came to James's research.
"Are you all right?" I asked,
knowing that Subaki herself came from the ninja clans. However, Subaki only offered a firm nod.
"I have long since cut my ties with them. For more than 1,000 years we have walked a different path. I only regret that you have lost their service."
I nodded my head slowly and let out a long sigh. This was the most tempted I had ever been to reset. However, I stopped myself. If I reset, the previous victory would be pointless. I would lose everyone tied to these worlds and have to start over from scratch. We still hadn't gotten far enough in Fior yet to find James's floor, and I did not want to have to deal with climbing the ranks all over again. In that case, what would help us to recover the most? Turning back the time of a world to before it was destroyed? No. I saw already that time travel like that would simply delete the planet from this timeline. Udana said that most of the machinery had been destroyed. Advancing the ranks to unlock more powers? No, that wouldn't do me any good, and would just open me up to more troubles later while I was recovering. In the end, there was one thing that I thought of, but it made me sigh in frustration. Up until now, I had been avoiding the creation of a fallen god companion, because I felt that Leowyn filled the role rather well with her void domain. But now, it was getting to the point where I could not just rely on Leowyn anymore. In doing so, I had forced her to use her energy more than any other deity. Tsubaki, I need to go meet with Leowyn in the admin room. Please ensure that my host returns to Olympus, I said softly, before focusing on ascending. When I ascended, I found some of the others sitting on the couch in the living room. Among them was Leowyn, her eyes red and cheeks puffy. Losing her original disciple must have been a big blow to her, not to mention the damage to the rest of the worlds. Leowyn, can I have a word in private? I asked. Leowyn blinked, nodding her head and wiping her eyes as she followed me to her room.
What? What is it, Dad?
She asked, closing the door once we were both inside. Lyra, can you tell me about her? I started, sitting down at the corner of Leowyn's bed. Leowyn's eyes widened slightly, but she moved to sit next to me.
She was pure, diligent. She always did her best for everything. She was one of the first ones that I trained to become a fallen goddess. Over the years, she started to become more comfortable with me, willing to speak her mind. She even objected to some of my decisions, to insert her own thoughts when she thought that I had made the wrong choice. Her and Strea were like sisters, both raised together. It'll be harder on her now that Lyra's gone. Leowyn looked down at her hands when she spoke, and I could tell that it was hard on her as well. There weren't many mortals that left that much impact on one of the companions when they died. The last time I saw it this severe was when Udana lost Bree. With your permission, I want to create her as a fallen goddess companion, I spoke honestly, Leowyn's eyes snapping up to meet mine. I've had the ability ever since we hit the fourth rank, but I haven't seen a reason to use it. I always thought that it would be enough with your power over the void, but I was wrong. I can see how much I've made you work over the years to keep everything working. No other god or goddess has had to exert half as much of their divinity as you have, unless it was for a private project like Sanctum. I thought about creating another race or world to have the fallen companion rule over, but honestly, I think we're getting oversaturated with new worlds as it is. I would rather choose from someone that already exists and let them ascend like you did, like Scarlet did. Then I thought about Lyra. It's no exaggeration to say that she gave her life for us in this fight. She was willing to lead the charge against an unknown foe and paid the ultimate sacrifice. Without her getting us the information that we needed, Dana wouldn't have been able to go and fight. None of us would have been able to do what we did. With all that in mind, if you approve, I will have Terra make the profile so that I can create her in the admin room. Leowyn's eyes widened at that. On the one hand, she would be getting her friend back after losing her. However, she knew that the Lyra that they got back would never be able to go back to being the old Lyra, not after being introduced to the greater workings of the world. Still, she nodded her head. I would.
I would very much like that, Dad.
Chapter 42. After leaving Leowyn's room, I found Tara standing outside, a knowing smile on her face. She brought her hands from behind her back, presenting me with a thick book with a black cover.
I heard the whole thing, naturally. I thought you'd be needing this.
I nodded my head, a thankful smile on my face, as I led Tara towards the living room.
Right. Did Tsubaki miss anything in her report, by the way? I know you'll have a clearer picture of what happened.
Tara put on a thoughtful expression. She covered the important points. However, there is one thing that she failed to notice. When Tara saw me looking over at her in caution, she shook her head.
We'll need to reboot the servers for World Seed, Fragments of Acidia, and Vision Expanse. The apocalypse that struck Despar manifested as a total shutdown of anything that required any form of energy to function. However, its true nature was a collapse of any advancement. All data was wiped from servers hosted in Despar, including the major games released by Dark Flame Technologies.
My brow twitched when I heard that.
And that was when it was nerfed by the layers of defense? Dare I ask what it would have been like otherwise?
Stagnation, Tara answered simply. No form of movement would be allowed in the universe. The longer it lasted, the stronger the beast would have become, until it had the power to devour the entire realm. I sucked in a breath before nodding my head.
Does that mean that the virtual worlds are all gone?
Only the ones hosted in Despar. Your own virtual self was there, but many were hosted in the Speaker servers or the other backups.
Right. I let out a faint sigh.
We'll need to set up a universal backup in Fior going forward. Obviously, those worlds aren't very protected in Despar. After saying that, I turned to face her again.
So there's nothing that we can salvage from those two worlds?
Tara hesitated for a moment before shaking her head.
Vivi, Chiho, and Fifi are still alive, because they retreated to Fior's servers when the evacuation order went out. Additionally, we still have the files for the games themselves, due to having bought them through the market.
I let out a long sigh of resignation.
For those people that scanned their last seed with digital conversion, will they still be able to take it out to replant their old trees?
Tara smiled slightly at that.
That's right. Digital conversion is a multi-world system. In other words, it is integrated into the void itself, in a way. Unless we choose to remove it, that system won't be damaged. However, with everyone needing to start fresh characters, they won't have the key or mana to create a seed like that.
Got it.
Ask Chiho if there's anything she can do as a one-time event with her authorization. Otherwise, it's fine to restart from the beginning.
It was disappointing for the survivors of this incident to lose their entire life's work in the games, but that was just another truth that came with this incident.
And keep an eye out for public outrage. I'm sure that there will be plenty of people trying to pin the blame on us for not giving them a proper warning before this.
Tara groaned, but nodded in agreement.
We warned them to the best of our abilities, working up to it over decades to try to get them to understand. Still, they're suffering, so they will look for anyone that they can blame to vent. Do you want me to do anything about it?
No. Just make sure that they don't get violent with those that evacuated. People shouldn't be blamed for taking our advice. There's going to be chaos for a while, especially in Deccan, but we can work through it.
After I said that, we started walking again, soon making our way into the living room.
Leowyn seemed to have teleported ahead of us, changing into her black, star-patterned dress that Rian made her long ago. She was clearly trying to look professional, clenching her fists in front of her.
I smiled towards the silver-haired elf before closing my eyes.
"Did Leowyn tell you all what we're about to do?" I asked, turning to address everyone.
They nodded their heads firmly.
"There is only one thing that I'd like to ask you all. I've been thinking it through. We have the points. If we want to, we could create a rule so that exceptional deities and fallen deities will be preserved after their death in the same way. If we do this, I plan to create more buildings like Ashley's offices. Everyone we bring up like this will get their own home.
I don't want people to believe that they will be entitled to eternity simply because they sacrificed. Rather, their sacrifice must have significant meaning. Lyra died because she led the charge against an unknown foe of unimaginable power. If we didn't have Fior, I would have been forced to flee to the void as soon as the invasion began, trying to end the fight immediately. If I did so and encountered that void god, I would have died. I have absolutely no doubts about this. If anyone other than Dana had stepped forward, they would have likely died. Without Lyra's sacrifice, everything could have been lost. That's why I am offering this choice. Those who make similar sacrifices in the line of duty, their sacrifices overturning a grim fate for one or more world, can be brought to the admin room. I won't be giving them the same authority as all of you. They won't be running their own worlds or anything like that. Instead, they will be residents of the admin room with the right to use the heavenly incarnation system. Terra and the others all looked at me in surprise, this suggestion no doubt seeming to come out of nowhere. However, it was true. We earned nearly 200,000 points by fighting back against this invasion. Coupled with what we already had, this was not only possible, but could be considered an investment. Anyone we brought up would be able to retain their domains and could then be reborn in the world when their mortal selves died again. Since we would only consider those who performed important sacrifices, we were far less likely to get anyone with a wicked heart. And if we did, there was always the option of simply rejecting them from the start.
I like it, Aurevi said with a grin.
We'll finally start getting some more faces around here. Acalia had a somewhat weak smile, seeming to still be thinking about the earlier invasion.
However, who is going to be in charge of choosing whose sacrifice was worth honoring?
I looked at Acalia, who seemed to flinch back. Don't worry, it's not you. I've already put enough on your plate choosing the domains of those that ascend through the three-step method. Instead, I know the perfect person for this job. In my opinion, it's the only real choice, as only they could judge whose sacrifice brought meaningful change while preserving the individual's identity. After I said that, I turned towards the individual in mind. Terra, would you be willing to do this task for me? You are not interfering in the functions of the world directly, and your changes would be limited solely to the admin room. With this in mind, I do not believe that the system would stop you from doing so. Terra's eyes went wide when she realized that I was talking about her, her ears standing up straight in alarm. Because of her restrictions as a system companion, her interactions with the world had been highly limited from the very beginning. The more we learned how to take care of things ourselves, the less she found herself needing, or even able, to do. Most of her time was spent simply lounging while watching the world like the biggest soap opera imaginable.
You want me to handle it? She asked, to which I nodded my head.
Is there any reason for the system to prevent it? I responded, and she seemed to seriously consider the question. I would allocate you a budget exclusively for this purpose. When you identify someone you deem worthy committing such a sacrifice, you will use your ability to reproduce their personality as a companion and assign them a place to live in the admin room. If they are a god or a fallen, you will provide them with their domains they had in life.
I don't think so.
Terra shook her head, a wide smile forming on her face. If you're sure this is something that you want me to do, I'd be more than happy to. I nodded my head, handing Lyra's profile book back to Terra. In that case, I smiled, stepping aside and mentally assigning her a budget of 20,000 points, while defining the restrictions of using those points within the system. That should be more than enough to last her for quite a while. Terra held the book, seeming more nervous than I had seen her in quite a while. After she calmed herself, she focused, the book shattering. As it did, an elven figure took shape in front of her, her silver hair a close match for Leowen's. She wore tight leather armor and had her eyes closed, as if embracing the death that she had previously suffered. It was a full 30 seconds before her eyes slowly opened, looking around. At this point, Leowen's shoulders were trembling, and she quickly walked over to wrap her arms around Lyra's shoulders.
Welcome back,
she said, in a soft tone.
Eh? Lyra blinked. What happened? Didn't I die to...
Her eyes widened, quickly closing her mouth. It's fine, I spoke up, hands behind my back and a smile on my face. He's already dead. The battle was won, thanks to your sacrifice.
Terra nodded her head, clearing her throat and speaking in a more official tone. Thanks to that very sacrifice, we have taken it upon ourselves to offer you a place in this eternity. This is the realm where the Greater Pantheon resides, and you are the third mortal to ever reach it. As with others here, you shall have the ability to be reborn in the mortal realm, living a new life and regaining your old powers.
If you reject this, I'm going to be very disappointed, Leowyn said quietly, causing my lips to tug up.
Huh? Lyra blinked rapidly again.
I accept? I don't know what else to say here.
What do I say here? Seeing her fall into a state of near panic, Leowyn, Aurevi, and the others let out a light laugh, Leowyn wiping her face.
You say that you accept, she said simply. Now, let's get you a house. There's not much to see here yet, but that should be changing over time.
Lyra nodded her head, still having clear trouble processing what had happened. Leowyn grabbed her by the hand, turning to lead her out the door. Once they were gone, I turned to look at the others. Obviously, Lyra will be helping Leowyn with the void, as we discussed before. If any of you take an interest in the future residents that Terra brings in, you may recruit them into your individual teams for whatever purpose you feel that they are suitable for. Several of the gods around the room perked up at that, causing me to chuckle. If they're going to be here, and you need people anyways, there is no reason not to ask them for help. Isn't that right?
I won't say no to extra hands if we get more people with travel-related domains in the future, Aurevi grinned, nodding her head excitedly.
Chapter 43 The recovery efforts were by no means simple. The easiest part was, by far, ending the quarantine of Fior and allowing everyone that had been evacuated to return to their homes. Those that had homes to return to, at least. In most worlds, the property damage was actually fairly minimal, with the apocalypse beasts targeting the people rather than the planets themselves. In truth, only Deccan and Sher-Din suffered a true cataclysm. Both of them needed the work of multiple gods to put their planets in a state where the citizens would be able to gradually recover. They needed to redevelop their foliage to a state where monsters would be able to spawn in. In doing so, Trival and Udana worked together to create zones within their respective worlds. They separated the plant life that they were creating by its level range, encouraging the natural spawns to remain within this range. Although it was not guaranteed to work, the results were largely positive. With a few exceptions that had to be quickly managed, the monsters being spawned were within the levels of the zones that they appeared in. Construction crews from the Mitong swept through, providing temporary shelters to those that needed it, while working to repair their damaged homes. With the vast majority of Deccan's technology destroyed, many people were left without basic needs for weeks. It took nearly 2 full months for some small semblance of normalcy to return to these months. By this point, most worlds had managed to recover most of their physical damages, with the loss of life being the most concerning issue. There was simply no better way to say it, other than that this incident had once again reminded the world the horrors of the void. For too long they had grown numb to the beasts that lurked beyond the world. Ever since the first defensive measures were put in place, void monsters were becoming less and less of a threat. Some even considered them jokes, able to only randomize numbers or change a person's perception of food. Now, the world had seen the full extent of what a void monster could do, and it horrified them. Even with all of their defenses in place, they had suffered to such a degree that their daily lives had been ruined. According to reports taken from deep scans, there were entire planets that had simply disappeared from Deccan's space. Theorists speculating that it was the result of the stars starting to go out. These theories could no longer be proven, and nobody dared to try.
Granted, there was criticism cast towards the Greater Pantheon, saying that they had downplayed the threat that the people would face. The people were stressed and needed an outlet for their frustrations. Towards this, the Greater Pantheon silently allowed their criticism, knowing that confrontation would only spark more infighting. Amidst the post-invasion chaos, however, was a new revelation. The fallen goddess, Lyra, had ascended to join the Keeper in his paradise. While it was said that she was not a member of the Greater Pantheon, the fact that she had survived her death had been confirmed, with several churches reporting that others may receive similar treatment only if they perform similarly meritorious deeds. It was the grace of Terra to allow one to ascend in such a way, but she would show no favoritism to any party. Only those who were truly worthy would find their place. Chelsea let out a sigh as she shut off the news, massaging her forehead. As one might expect, the destruction of the world's technology had caused the Ashtanu Research Foundation to quite literally collapse. Because of this, they had taken the step that they had previously only considered in passing, and created a unique world for themselves to do their research. It had taken 2 full months to develop a research facility in this new world, but they already had a mountain of work on their plates, waiting to be completed.
Okay, I'll be busy with helping out Ashley with the new code for a while. James, you good to rebuild the mana plant?
James nodded his head, tapping his forehead. Got all of the plans memorized up here.
I'll get it up and running again in no time.
She nodded, turning to look at Tracia.
In that case, I'll leave public relations to you. The Research Institute left Deccan, but we're still in business. We need to make sure that everyone knows that.
Tracia gave an emphatic nod before hesitating.
What are we going to call ourselves now? Our old name doesn't really work, and was never really that official anyways. We weren't the only research team in the city, but the name still managed to stick.
Chelsea thought about it briefly before shaking her head.
I'll leave that to you as your first job, dealing with the public. Whatever you come up with, we'll let you handle it. Also, while we're not directly hiring more members, we will accept collaborations and research. This isn't a time for anyone to be picky, so if there's a good project that can help everyone, we need to make sure it goes through.
Tracia nodded her head, Chelsea looking over at the final member of the team. Seeing her currently white eyes, she nodded.
Nora, you and Thea should try to reach out to the ninjas. A lot of their businesses are still around, but they lost their major world. Tell them we have a proposition for them.
Nora blinked, tilting her head slightly.
What proposition would that be?
We'll allow the ninjas to make their base on a secondary planet within this system, she said simply, surprising the others nearby. Like I said, we're not hiring. However, the ninjas have been almost constantly conducting their own research. If there's anyone worth collaborating with, it would be them. Additionally, if we can keep them close, we will be able to get their help in the future if we need more manpower for anything. Tell them that if they agree, their first job is to help build the void shield around this world. Nora nodded her head, her eyes switching to black for a moment as Thea took over.
Depending on how many of them are left, there shouldn't be a problem getting their help. Though I doubt that many from the command structure survived. They might even be in their own internal chaos right now, trying to sort out who should lead them.
Even better, Chelsea grinned. If that's the case, then our help will let them be indebted to us. Either way, you'll be the liaison with that group for the near future. Once we've got the mana plant back up and running, James will help everyone come up with more projects to study.
Right. Thea nodded her head before pausing. What code is it that you are planning to work on this time?
An expansion of the previous. I made 3 more worlds to cover the other base energy types. When I was setting up this world, I didn't include any special materials or functions, all because I plan to expand our admin privileges and digital conversion. Once that's done, we'll have no need to worry about material costs. The last code took me years to get through, but it should be a lot easier this time, now that I've started to get a grasp of the code's structure. Still, it will probably take a few months to get all 4 working together in the testing environment. Until I'm done,
I can't have anyone disturbing me, since this project is rather sensitive and could be volatile if I'm in the middle of a test."
The others nodded their heads, understanding the importance of what Chelsea wanted to do. Once she had finished with this update, it wouldn't be a stretch to call the facility completely self-sufficient. Rather than saying that they were off the grid, they were the ones creating the grid in the first place. I closed my eyes as I sat back on the couch, waiting for the notification from the system. There were too many damages to be dealt with for me to stay in Olympus and wait for them to pass naturally. After we had the proper damage report, I began setting up alarms to prepare to fast forward. Although I was guaranteed a pass for 1 month after being attacked, that didn't mean that I was willing to let things progress slowly while my world was in such a dire strait. If I did and found out that our next invasion would be just as harsh, or worse, might even be with the same guy, that wasn't something that I was willing to gamble with. The fact that we had defeated his invasion would let him know that we were strong enough to deal with a void god. If he managed to get us as his opponent again, it's likely that he might send an entire team of them. If that was the case, there wouldn't be a second.